Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Canadian-based jazz pianist and composer Florian Heffner. He has new material coming out in 2022, and we discuss that along with COVID life and his world of music. He was born and raised in Germany, trained in New York City, and now he's based in Canada. He draws from a myriad of influences that cultivate his unique brand of modern jazz. Over the years, he has collaborated and shared the stage with the likes of Kurt Rosenwinkel, Joe Lovano, Seamus Blake, Rich Perry, John Riley, and so many others. He's got a great story. Enjoy.
Hey, thanks for taking a minute out for the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for thinking of me.
We're living through probably an unprecedentedly strange time on planet Earth right now. And this has been particularly difficult for musicians. So talk to me a little bit about how you've been doing with, you know, just getting through as an artist during this time since March of 2020 in the COVID world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it has been very, very difficult, like for most artists, I think. You know, with all the cancellations, I live quite isolated here in Newfoundland, so I always need to travel to play or bring in people. All of that shut down immediately in March 2020, so I lost a bunch of performances, like whole tours that I had booked in Europe. I had to keep postponing my recording because the people I play with in my trio, they're in Toronto and I couldn't travel there safely. So there were lots of disruptions. And then when we just thought it was all going to be fine again this fall, you know, everything came back again. I was lucky to be able to go to Europe in October. I caught a brief window where it was okay. And I was supposed to go again in December, and that tour I had to cancel like 2 weeks before because of the Delta wave they had over there. We have Omicron. Everything is canceled again for the next little while. So that up and down I didn't quite expect. Yeah, the recent wave came quite as a surprise. Just when we were thinking we could, you know, things are going back to normal and we could play again. So on that side, it's been pretty challenging with the performances. At the beginning, when everything shut down in 2020, it was a good opportunity for me to get some writing and practicing done. So I had a pretty good stretch there for a few weeks, like 2 months, where I could really just stay home and focus on writing. That's when I wrote all the music for my new trio album that's going to be out this year. So that was maybe one positive outcome of it. But, you know, in recent months, now everything has moved online. I'm teaching at a university as well, so that time advantage is completely gone now that everything just moves to online when in person isn't possible, which actually takes up quite a bit more of preparation time in terms of teaching.
You know, and I guess that's the thing about this that no one expected is how it would go back and forth. There was a notion that, you know, once we get vaccinated and things kind of start calming down, we're just going to get back to it, but it just keeps reemerging. So you mentioned a new album, and I want to know talk to me a little bit about this new album. And you know, it's being made during this very strange time. It's going to come out probably when people are really looking forward to music. And hopefully you can perform it live. So what are your thoughts and expectations as 2022 unfolds with the new album on the horizon?
I do hope that when it comes out that we'll be able to tour and perform the repertoire live. The album is it's kind of a follow-up on my last trio album, First Spring, that came out in 2019 in the fall. It's the same trio. This time I wrote more original material. The First Spring is all covers of folk and trad music, but this one I wrote mostly original stuff. Yeah, that extended writing phase was very beneficial. I could really dig into some new concepts. I checked out some post-minimalist composers and tried to use some of their techniques and transfer them to jazz trio writing. So I tried a couple of new things and I think it turned out well. I just got the mixes a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, I'm looking forward to sharing it with the world.
So talk to me a little bit about, you were originally born in Germany, trained in New York City, now you're in Canada. Talk to me a little bit about how all of this kind of began for you, not only with music, but your love of jazz.
Yeah, so I grew up in a small town in northern Bavaria in Germany. I grew up in a small town in northern Bavaria, and there was not a lot of jazz around. And there was one piano teacher at the local music school who knew a little bit about jazz. I studied with him kind of by chance. I started with him, and he introduced me to, you know, my first Oscar Peterson tape. You know, tapes were still a thing back then. Oscar Peterson, Michel Camilo, I remember, John Coltrane. And I really liked listening to those artists. I didn't quite know what it was, but something spoke to me. I really liked the rhythmic element, the groove, the harmonies. Yeah, so I got interested. My dad bought a couple of more CDs for us to listen to. At my high school, there was a big band as well, and I started going to jazz camps, as you do as a teenager if you're interested in this. And then, you know, that was my first time I got to interact with professional jazz musicians and get some firsthand great advice how to practice and how to play this music. And so I got into it deeper and deeper, and when it came time to pick a program to study, I knew that I wanted to do jazz. I really loved performing it, and I wanted to get better at it. You know, I love the improvisation aspect as well, the freedom to come up with things on the spot. Yeah, some of all these elements really spoke to me. And then I did my undergraduate degree in Berlin at the University of the Arts, and then I got a scholarship to go to New York, and I did my master's at the Manhattan School of Music. I stuck around for a few years after, and then my wife, who I met in New York, she's a musician as well, she won a full-time teaching gig here in St. John's as a clarinetist, and she's teaching saxophone as well. And so we just kind of tried it out to move out in a more remote location. We've been here now since 2014. I was a little bit wary at first, you know, leaving New York City for a place with not much of a jazz scene. But it's worked out quite well, except for the pandemic, I would say, because I have my connections that I've made during my time in New York. I have connections in Toronto, Montreal. So I keep playing with these people. I always have to travel, but that's all right. And what I want here in St. John's is just a lot more time, really, to spend on the instrument and spend composing, which has been very beneficial.
So what was the first live jazz show you saw that was really spectacular for you?
Yeah, I don't quite get the order right. I don't know what was first, but I did see Dave Brubeck in a local concert hall where I grew up, and Herbie Hancock with the New Standard Tour back then, which was a really amazing experience. Those two concerts really stuck in my memory as fantastic experience. I didn't know who these people were back then, right? Like, you kind of, you had known, Herbie Hancock, but they didn't have that kind of legendary status and that value that they have for me today, where I really understand their music and their relevance. So it's kind of interesting thinking back, going to these concerts as a teenager, just kind of knowing the name but not really knowing what it is. Sometimes I wish I could still go to a concert and hear it with kind of these completely unbiased ears, right? Like hearing it like it's the first time. So those were really special performances, and I'm grateful that my dad took me to those.
So you've had a chance to perform with some pretty big people in jazz. You did a collaboration with Kurt Rosenwinkel. What's it like to team up with people that have clout like Kurt does and others?
It's a wonderful learning opportunity always to play with someone who's better than you and interact with them in the ensemble to observe how do they prepare for the gig, how are they in the studio. Like, especially being in the studio with Kurt was very interesting to see. Like, how does he record? Like, when does he call another take, and when is he happy, and when does he find his optimal performance? Like, when is he happy with what he did, and when does he want to do more? How does he play over music that I wrote? What are his ideas? So I learned a lot from that. I transcribed a couple of the things that he did with some of my tunes when we recorded that album. And usually these people are very, very generous with advice and their time. And I'm very grateful to have had these opportunities.
So kind of traveling more down that path, what's the most enjoyable part of being a professional musician for you? What do you look forward to the most each day?
I mean, the highlights are always performing, right? Like, especially being on tour with a group and really doing it day after day and really getting into a great rapport and knowing their repertoire really well. Yeah, my favorite thing is just going on stage and performing in a musical situation that I like. Right? There are also things that you do, kind of, you know, playing a background show at a restaurant or something. That's fun too. But the highlights for me are concerts where I go and play my music or someone else's music, and people come specifically to listen to that music. Yeah, traveling is great too. You know, I love playing in new venues, meeting people along the way. And what I've also come to really enjoy as a composer is to see your piece performed for the first time, especially when I write pieces for other ensembles. I write a bit for classical ensembles as well. Like hearing that first performance of your own piece, that's very special too. That's a very rewarding experience for me.
So speaking of stage, and as we've established, you know, the elephant in the room is COVID. You know, when things hopefully do slow down, and when we get back to it, hopefully this spring, what do you hope that we all realize about the power of live music, both the musician and the audience?
Yeah, I think what comes out of this is that no one will take it for granted anymore. I noticed it a little bit already when I was out on tour in October in Europe. Like, people seem to be just more excited about live music, and they appreciated live music even more, I think. Like, I just felt that everything had a higher value to the people who came to the show, and they were just so happy that they were able to see a traveling band again. And if there's anything positive to get out of this is that realization that, you know, it can go away and then we're going to miss it. And an online performance is just not the same thing, right? And you can see at the beginning of the pandemic, there were so many online performances, and this has kind of slowed down a little bit now because I think there's a certain saturation and people are ready to hear live music again, I think.
Traveling further down that kind of, you know, magical road of live performance, if you could get into a time machine and go back and see somebody in the world of jazz at any point, see them live, who would you go see?
Oh, there's a bunch of people. You know, I sometimes speak with people who are a little bit older than me who had the chance to see some of the greats that had already passed away by the time that I got into this. Like, I don't know, I would love to see John Coltrane with his quartet or Miles Davis. Going further back, Art Tatum, Thelonious Monk. I'd love to see someone like Horace Silver, just to name a few. But yeah, if I could go back and hear those bands live, that would be absolutely amazing.
Everything's going to come down to this. Everyone has a perception of you, your family, your friends, your fans. But ultimately, you live your life. You have a perception of yourself. Who do you think you are?
Yeah. That's a difficult question. Well, I think I'm someone who really loves music, who is really dedicated to it. I work hard every day, like as much time as I can get to be on the instrument. That's not because I have ambition to be better than someone else. It's just really because I love doing it. I love finding out why things sound great. I love engaging with recordings. I sit down a lot and play along with recordings and try to figure out what they do. So yeah, I think I'm someone who's driven by the love of music and by the love of expressing myself through music on stage. I would describe myself as a more introverted person, but on stage, being able to play music, I feel all these boundaries gone, and I feel really free to express myself.
Beautiful. Florian, thank you for taking time out for Neon Jazz. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm always happy to do these, yeah.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Germany, Canada, New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Florian for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com, and for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.